Karoti Guru Shri Raja Rupacha.
Parikshit Maharaj replied.
Parikshit Maharaj replied.
Krishna.
Krishna.
By seeing.
By seeing.
Sutabhyam.
Sutabhyam.
Also by hearing.
Also by hearing.
From the scriptures or law books.
From the scriptures or law books.
Yet.
Yet.
Since.
Since.
Papam.
Papam.
Sinful criminal action.
Sinful criminal action.
Janam.
Janam.
Knowing.
Knowing.
Api.
Api.
Although.
Although.
Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Of his self.
Of his self.
Ahitam.
Ahitam.
Injurious.
Injurious.
Paroti.
Paroti.
He acts.
He acts.
Bhuyaha.
Bhuyaha.
Again and again.
Again and again.
Vivashaha.
Vivashaha.
Unable to control himself.
Unable to control himself.
Prayaschittam.
Prayaschittam.
Atonement.
Atonement.
Atto.
Atto.
Therefore.
Therefore.
Katam.
Katam.
What is the value of?
What is the value of?
Translation, Maharaj Parikshit said, one may know that sinful activity is injurious for him because he actually sees that a criminal is punished by the government and rebuked by people in general, and because he hears from scriptures and learned scholars that one is thrown into hellish conditions in the next life for committing sinful acts. Nevertheless, in spite of such knowledge, one is forced to commit sins again and again, even after performing acts of atonement. Therefore, what is the value of such atonement? Srila Prabhupada reports. In some religious sects, a man goes to a priest to confess his sinful acts and pay a fine. But then he again commits the same sin and returns to confess them again. This is the practice of confessional sinners. Parikshit Maharaj's observations indicate that even 5,000 years ago, it was the practice of criminals to atone for their crimes, but then commit the same crimes again, as if forced to do so. Therefore, owing to his practical experience, Parikshit Maharaj saw that the process of repeatedly sinning and atoning is pointless. Regardless of how many times he's punished, one who is attached to sense enjoyment will commit sinful acts again and again until he is trained to refrain from enjoying his senses. The word vivasha is used herein, indicating that even one who does not want to commit sinful acts will be forced to do so by habit. Parikshit Maharaj, therefore, considered the process of atonement to have little value for saving one from sinful acts. In the following verse, he further explains his rejection of this process. I'll read the following verse. This is basically a follow-up. Text 10 goes like this. Kvachan nivartate avadrat kvachit charati tat punaha vayaschitam ato apartam manye kunjara sochavat. Sometimes one who is very alert so as not to commit sinful acts is victimized by sinful life again. I therefore consider this process of repeated sinning and atoning to be useless. Apartam. It is like the bathing of an elephant. For an elephant cleanses itself by taking a full bath, but then throws dust over its head and body as soon as it returns to the land. the fourth. When Parikshit Maharaj inquired how a human being could free himself from sinful activities so as not to be forced to go to hellish planetary systems after death, Sukadeva Goswami answered that the process of counteracting sinful life is atonement. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Parikshit, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process as genuine. Now, Parikshit Maharaj is expecting another answer from his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. Ma om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vichale Smati Bhakti Vidanda Savinithi Namadhi Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaudu Bharit Charane Nidhi Saisa Kinya Bharit Pascha Chakra Sitarane Omma Gyanam Chimbaram Dasya Naranjanak Salakara Chatsur Udmilitam Jainam Chaismai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Trivyasya Yata Sindhu Vyeda Jatitanam Bhavane Yo Vaisadevyo Namo Namaha. So these are now his objections to this idea that a sahabi can be saved from going to hell. He says in the scriptures there is a process of atonement. You should do this in this life as soon as possible while you have the strength and energy, because the longer you wait, the worse it will get. And you should follow this prescribed path of atonement. So this is his. And as Prabhupada says, he's starting with this answer and with the expectation that Maharaj Parikshit will not be satisfied with it. He's deeper in this. And so this is his objection. We have experience that a person acts sinfully, buyaha, repeatedly will act sinfully, even though drishta, he has seen what happens. In other words, he has seen somebody become punished, just like a criminal is caught, goes on trial, suffers disgrace, goes to jail, and one sees how much they suffer, so one has seen. One just knows, one has heard. The scriptures say this will happen. So, first of all, the superior person should just refrain from doing sinful activity, just on the basis of having heard the injunction of the Lord. It's simple. You should give it up. Someone else has to see it happen. And then the worst thing, of course, is you do it and you're punished, and then as soon as you get out of jail or whatever, you do it again. And he says this is a problem. Prabhupada said even 5,000 years ago was a problem. It's a big problem today. That it is not enough. People have heard and they've seen and they've experienced themselves that the consequence of a sinful activity is suffering, and yet that does not stop them. And it keeps going on. Maybe it stops some people, but not very many. The government, they try to make example like Martha Stewart, when she went to trial and she was such a popular person with her own magazine and TV show. The guy of gracious living for millions of American women. And they discovered financially she was involved in insider trading or something like that. So they decided to make an example of her. So she had to go through this humiliation of a trial and disgrace and loss of name and loss of fortune. Goes to jail. literally they put her in jail and everything. You will find out that it will not stop insider trading. She might even do it herself, do it again. But even though all these people that are supposed to be exemplary, that does not stop. This is his objection. Everyone knows one big issue for the criminal justice system is recidivism, is the word they use, recidivism. How many people who get out of jail go right back, start keeping their criminal career going. In fact, many times while they're in jail, they're plotting their next crime with people they met. And so when the criminal justice system is supposed to be reformatory, people are supposed to learn and improve and come out and start over again, having paid their debt to society, still a huge percentage goes right back again and does it again, even though they suffer. People expect to suffer, even as is saying among these people, you know, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. You just have to expect to go to jail. So we see this is what's going on. Regardless of how many times he's punished, one who's attached to sense enjoyment will commit sinful acts again and again until he's trained to refrain from his joying of senses. We have a Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asked this question of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. You know where that is?
End of the third chapter.
Yes, yeah, in the third chapter. He says, what is it that impels a person unwillingly? He says, as if unwillingly, I think he says that. That Eva is there, as if unwillingly to perform a sinful act. In other words, you don't want to do it, you know better, but still something grabs hold of you and you do it. And Krishna says, it is karma. Lust. Meaning, karma means not just sexual desire, but a whole strong desire to enjoy the senses of the material world. And so that it's born of the mode of passion. This is the main symptom of Rajaguna. And when that mode is in control, it takes, you feel like you're being taken over. And you may resist and postpone and do these whole things, but finally it just impels you. You're impelled. And then he says, Krodha. It gets deeper. Krodha means anger. That when you enjoy the senses, there's always suffering. The nature of the mode of passion causes misery. So that's one of the result of the mode of passion is misery. Good intentional activities are really misery. Why misery? Misery because you're never satisfied. The nature of the mode of passion is it burns like fire and never satisfied. Krishna describes lust. The mode of passion is that people who are conducted by this mode, they work very hard to get so many things, they want it so badly, they break the rules. They don't do things properly, they take shortcuts, they engage in creative accounting. And so on. And so they commit sinful activities. And then having done that, the ultimate result is they'll not be satisfied. Because first of all, they have to do it again. They may have a conscience, which will cause them suffering. There are some people that have no conscience, but most people do. So it will cause them suffering by their own conscience. And they also find out that they're not satisfied. After they get what they want, they're not satisfied. It's not enough. They want more. They need more. And they're driven. Driven by this mode of action. And so again they do it. Again they do it. They suffer each time more and more. So all that suffering leads to krodha, anger. And then anger impels you to do more things. When anger grabs a hold of you, you don't know anything that happens. So you become, the nature of anger is destructive. Really, you even commit more sinful activities. This is the nature. So he's saying he's pointing to the fact that there's something underlying the whole tendency to commit sinful activities to begin with. What do we do about that? It's priyastha. Chitta doesn't really deal with it. Because he said, we see this. It simply doesn't work. So sometimes one can, he says, sometimes one stops doing it. He refrains from doing these bad things for a while, and sometimes he commits it again. He knows it's wrong. He's trying not to, but still it happens. And so this is a very precarious position, he's saying. He commits it again. So therefore, he says, this prayasuttam ato aparta manya. I think of it as useless. It is like the bathing of an elephant. So Prabhupada kind of expands it in the translation. Maybe in the West we haven't seen elephants bathe. But they wade out into the river and they get in under the water and they squirt water over themselves. Then when they get back out on the ground again, they then clean dirt all over their bodies. So the purpose of the bathing is to get clean. The first thing they do is they get dirty again. I mean, they have their reasons, but this is what it's like. People get purified and immediately sin again. Prabhupada calls it a professional sinner. This is what they do. And sometimes, of course, people even use the process of purification as an aid to their sin. They think that if I go to confession, the consequences will be wiped out, and that leaves me free to sin again, and I can always go to confession afterwards. Thinking that there's also people who know to chant the Hare Krishna mantra with the purpose of, we'll go out and have a few beers and I'll chant Hare Krishna. Okay. I won't get the reaction. The sinning on the strength of chanting. The prophet says one should not enlist the holy name in one's sinister purposes. Oh, right. One is taking the holy name to be delivered from birth and death into your world and attain love of Krishna. But if I use it to increase my sinful reaction, how will it be powerful? My sinful activities and my material attachments. What if you manage to pervert the very means of deliverance? What's going to deliver us? And this one can sometimes be a little subtle. People just don't care if we go, you know, I'm a devotee, you know, I'm not really subjected to these ordinary reactions, so it won't be so bad. So one has to be careful on this, this kind of thing. Now we can come to a higher platform. Now that we've been, it's very thorough. Bhagavatam is being very thorough. One reason to bring this up is just that people may say, well, wait a minute, what about this? There's the prescribed prayastrita and these kinds of things. And won't that work? So he wants to bring that up as a description on a certain platform, because many people do like this, and they don't go any deeper. So many people, their religious life is very superficial like this. Their idea is, well, first of all, I talk to people who think that it's not possible to become free from sinful activities. They're just already convinced of that it's not possible. Only God is pure. We're all contaminated, we're suffering, so we're all going to be sinning. But if we take shelter of Jesus or whatever, then he's died for those sins we're going to commit anyway. So once you say we're going to commit them anyway, then you're starting to get in that position, Jesus died for my sins so that I can go on sinning. Because they're very superficial, and they don't really take up actual spiritual practices that will purify them. And so this is their level. And they think that, you know, they will go to heaven, but that they will not suffer in hell. They might be very surprised to find that doesn't work like that. So one has to come to a higher platform. What Jesus said wasn't that you know, I suffered so that you will not have to. What he said was, I suffered to show you should follow my example. You should take up the cross and follow me. So many people think, no, he did it so I won't have to. But it just everything gets messed up like this. I had a friend who was a close friend of mine in graduate school, and then after I became a devotee, I discovered, I don't think he didn't finish, but he became, he joined the Soka Gakkai, this teacher in Shoshu. Yeah, this teacher in Shoshu, where they chant a version of a sutra. It's actually originally Sanskrit, but it's in Japanese. And when I met up with them, and what they were telling us, that they're, one time they were quite active. They're still active in Japan, they're a political party. But in America, they seem to subdue themselves. So they're going around getting everybody to take this, what was it called? Scroll and put it up. Huh? Yeah, that's right. And you chant. You know your lingua right in front of this scroll. And the inducement is that you are supposed to think about what you want and your desire to be granted. That was by your genes. And so when I met my friend, he was not only into it, he was a leader. And he was telling me how it worked. That when he sat in front of the bull and he chanted, he got what he wanted, and he was supposed to think very intensely on it. But after hearing it, I said, you know, look, we both sat in courses. We understood what Buddha taught. So how is it that you're Buddhists when the major teaching of Buddhists is to become free from desire? It's one of the fourfold noble truths, you know. Cause of our suffering or desire, one must extirpate these desires. So, said, you know he taught that. He says, yeah, sure, he said. And then he said, he said, but, and that's the ultimate goal. he said, but you cannot, now here's something that Buddha never said, but you cannot become free from desires until you've satisfied them all. And that most people, you know, the idea of nirvana is not attractive to them, and everything like this. So this way by chanting, and then you get all your desires satisfied because of it. That's what he said. But they have no idea of no sense gratification, because he said people don't realize that nirvana is the biggest orgasm of them all. In other words, another form of sense gratification. Like big sex. Anyway, that's what happened. Buddha comes, and this is the nature of this world. Buddha comes and, you know, teaches this very uncompromising, just tells everybody the truth. The material world is suffering, the cause of the suffering are our desires. One has to become free from these desires. But now it's down to this people of Buddha saying you have to satisfy all your desires in the name of Buddha. This is called in the Bhagavad Gita Dharma Shaglani, the decline of religion. That was what was attractive about Srila Prabhupada, is that he was telling the truth. He didn't make a compromise. Because actually, when I was in graduate school, I decided that Buddha had really told the truth. And I decided that, from what my investigations were, all religions on the highest level were saying this. But then you'd go to the various religious groups, and everybody backs away from it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't, you know, that is simply not interested in actually becoming free from desires, from material desires. And always they're saying that you can satisfy your desires, but in a nice way or in a good way, or in a way that will be happy to God, or God wants you to enjoy. Remember this Reverend, what's his name? Heikendorf. God doesn't want you to be a poor man. They have this thing in Christianity now called the gospel of prosperity. That the proof of your salvation is you're rich and you enjoy like crazy. When I was looking around, everybody was on this particular point. They were pulling their punches, or didn't even understand it. But when I got into Krishna consciousness, everybody understood very clearly. The Prabhupada was asked by a reporter in London. She said, there are so many gurus who come from India. How can we tell who's a real guru? Said the Prabhupada, how are you different from them? And Prabhupada says, we do not bluff. We do not cheat. Meaning that he speaks things as they are. So, otherwise, becomes a cheater, and the cheater, somebody wants sense gratification, or they promise sense gratification, or they're both cheaters. So this is we're coming now to the real point of what one has to do actually to become free from all these ultimately the causes of suffering, the causes of misery, and so that one will permanently be immune from the effects of hellish life. And something that's actually doable, practical, it can be done. Okay, comments, questions?
Yeah. I know that I mean delusion, but also in Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, verse 13, they use Maya as meaning Bhagavad Gita. Is that the same word?
No, it's not the same word. It's a personal pronoun.
There's the word Maya, which is illusion, and Maya.
See, Maya has two long A's.
Oh, okay.
And this one is the second A is long. Maya. It's a big difference in Sanskrit. When you write it in Devanagari, it is a big difference. When you write it in the English, it's like a little line. But in Sanskrit, the long A is a big bar. Two different words. Anything else? Yeah? Yeah. Well, it's not just them. It's right now it's in some particularly egregious form in Texas. And with whom? Protection means from both Bahirna Shinga Ridaya Shinga, both outside and inside. So we also want to protect the Krishna consciousness movement. Actually, we should that way. And for external protection, we would like not when it's done in a pure way, it's so that please protect us so that we can peacefully prosecute Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if we're not protecting, there's so many disturbances. You know, there was a period in America where people were kidnapping devotees and deprogramming them, and that made it hard. So there are external enemies, and because of those external enemies, they made it hard. So we would like to have a peaceful atmosphere so that we can practice Krishna consciousness without disturbance. So we ask for that. So that's not necessary. Then internally, it's not just actually internally, all the things in my heart that are also disturbances to Krishna consciousness. So bahya, nishilavidaya, nishilavidaya, both outside and inside. But actually, it should be for the practice, for devotional service. Krishna says in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Shema Vaham Yaham. The one who's like a constant steady devotee, he carries their yoga shema. Yoga shema means everything that you need to acquire. one meaning of yoga is connection, so it's also like almost it's a business term. Get it? And shema is secure possession of what you have. So yoga shema shows up early in the Vedas is completely material context. Your yoga and shema. One way it says in the dictionary that you can read a Vaishya and say, shema mate. Shema is all your wealth secure. Everybody wants that, to get things and possess it securely. The Krishna says, I do that for the devotee. And in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says it gives them everything they need for spiritual advancement and protects them from falling down. But when he talks about this verse in so many lectures, he also says it's material. He provides all the necessities that a devotee needs. And actually, we should feel confident of that. Because otherwise that'll be a distraction. Because to give so much time and effort to Krishna consciousness, we think, wow, wait a minute, you know, how will I take care of myself? This will be a big distraction. You have to work. Everybody knows that to prosper in America, you have to have at least a 60-hour week, and we don't do a 60-hour week of business activity. What will happen? And Krishna says, I'll take care of it. So it's not that we want something for Krishna, but for our sense gratification, but we do need to be freed up and in peace of mind to practice devotional service. So Krishna will take care of that. Yeah, take away the fear. Abhayam, abhayam, atman, fearlessness. So the material world, everybody's in fear all the time. Terrorists, germs, hantavirus, flu virus, tax collectors, the Bush administration, whatever it is, everybody is a fearful place. At any minute, everything can be destroyed. And you know, so many people who are spending all their time protecting everything, they get wiped out anyway. Not under their control. So, a devotee practice Krishna consciousness should understand that Krishna is my protector. Be my maintainer, my protector. That's not sense gratification. It's not a calculation. It's just that the example is that if a little child is in danger, a little kid doesn't know how to calculate. It just goes to the mother, it goes to the father, just spontaneously. So a devotee, if there's any difficulty, go to Krishna. Like that. So anyway, Krishna gives us this assurance. He says to surrender to him. Well, so if you surrender to him, you may think, what happens to my future? And Krishna is saying, basically, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it for you. I'll manage it, and I'll do a better job than you do. I'll be your career manager, and I'll take care of you. And so you can trust Krishna in this matter.
You know, with the SGI, I did it for 9 years, and I had to break away because I didn't like the idea of chanting for what I want. I did it sometimes, but most of the time I chanted for internal things, like for love and peace and stuff.
That's why you're here.
And then, like, I couldn't accept, and then I started rejecting atheists, you know, and I liked it, really speaking, but I didn't like the idea of not believing in God, you know, so I started worshiping God, you know, believing in God, I didn't know how to worship Him, and then I had a lot of problems with Him because of my views.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Prabhupada said there's no harm in being impersonal if you haven't heard about Krishna. Have you heard about Krishna? You know what to do. Anything else?
When am I going to get my test?
Oh, I don't know. Okay. Today I'm busy, but maybe sometime this week. You come in the morning, and you have to go off in the day, or are you busy then?
I'm basically here.
So, do you take breakfast too?
Yeah.
It's someday after breakfast. I don't know about that. I have to see this. This is a busy week. Yeah, we'll do it. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.